the journey to leadership is anything but conventional. Join Justin Gray as he talks with badass leaders from across the globe to discover where they came from and the drive that got them to where they are today. Welcome. This is Driven & Co.
So hello and welcome again. My name is Justin Gray. I'm the CEO of LeadMD and SixBricks, and you are listening to the Driven & Co. podcast. Today, I've got a great guest that is going to be talking about a subject near and dear to my heart, which is, of course, education. So today, I'm welcoming Sylvan. And Sylvan, I hope I don't butcher your last name, but Sylvan Kalhosh, is that correct?
Yeah.
It depends. It will start rolling off my tongue at some point in this podcast.
Yeah, if you want to say the French way, it's Kalash, but American people say Kalachi.
Sylvan Kalash. Yeah, I like it. So Sylvan is the co-founder of Holberton School. And Sylvan, I'll let you give us kind of a brief bio and then also a little bit of an overview of what you do at Holberton.
All right. Thank you, Justin. As you may tell, I'm from France. Grew up there until 17 years old, and then I moved to China to continue my master of software engineering, where I lived for a year. And then in 2009, I moved in the San Francisco Bay Area, where I finished my master, got a job at SlideShare. SlideShare is like YouTube, but for PowerPoint.
Oh yeah, very familiar with SlideShare.
Yeah, it's like a great website, where you can access a lot of content for free. So started working there as a software engineer, and after a year, we got acquired by LinkedIn, where I worked as a senior software engineer for 3 years. And in the meantime, I did a bunch of side projects, including Wild42, which is the largest network of French and French speaker software engineer. And eventually in 2015, I quit my job at LinkedIn to create Holberton School.
Awesome. So yeah, I definitely want to get into that, dive into that journey there. But before we do so, let's take it all the way back to the beginning. What did you want to be when you grew up?
So that's like quite an interesting question, because it's, I would say in some way quite different from what I'm doing. I wanted to help animals. I have a very close connection to animals, and I was kind of shocked how, defenseless, animals are compared to humans. And so I wanted to help them in some way. As a kid, I think you don't really... you are not concerned about, like kind of the financial implication. Right. Is there a job in this area, kind of things? I wanted to help animal. And today I'm not helping animal, but I'm helping people, to get jobs. So maybe that's kind of the, interesting connection.
Yeah, I don't think I've had one person on this podcast that has grown up to do what they thought they were wanting to do as a child. So it'll be interesting to see if we ever run across that that interesting, unique snowflake. But it definitely always is a journey, and to your point, one that is really hard to pursue as we're thinking about our lives as children and so on. So let's talk about, you mentioned that obviously you're born in France and kind of pursued your education in a number of different areas. So tell me a little bit about what was that? Was that software development and engineering?
Yeah, it was a master in computer science.
Okay, got it. And so, I've heard that there are a large number of engineers in France that are trained outside of traditional universities. Is that correct? Or maybe just kind of give us a little bit of background about how, what computer science looks like in France.
Yeah, so like one of the main difference, I would say, with the US is that generally we have stronger foundation in maths, mathematics, mm-hmm. and science in general. As far as software engineering goes, I think there is a very interesting trend that started in France about 15 years ago with a school named Epitech, which basically said, hey, why don't we try to train software engineer with a totally different way, where we have no formal teacher and no lectures. And, you know, it took some time to, you know, get kind of like the reputation it has today, but it grew a lot. And today through Epitech that has grown, you know, in multiple cities and other schools like that, roughly about 50% of software engineers are trained, you know, this way. And a lot of them are working in the Silicon Valley, you know, in best company like Google, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn and so on. And so this type of education has grown its popularity, and more schools are leaning toward it.
And so what you're really talking about is learning by doing, right? Like kind of learning from within either a project or, an actual like work environment, correct?
Exactly. Like, you know, when you think about it, software engineering is like a craft, mm-hmm. right? It's an art where you need to, transform thoughts, you know, in code. And it's like, you know, if you want, you know, we speak about friends, like, let's say you want to bake the best baguette, right? Like the best bread you ever had. You can read all the baking books that you want, you know, about how to make the best bread. You know, you will never achieve it until you practice, right? You bake once, twice, and you're like, you adjust, you know, your recipe and the way of doing. And basically, you know, you can apply this to all sort of craft, including software engineering, where it's indeed a project-based approach, where you learn by doing, and also a peer learning-based approach, where basically you like the knowledge is not brought to you by someone like the teacher, but is like you know it's accessible all around you, including you know through your peers, and so you know you as one of the peer will you know absorb this knowledge from other peers, and also you should give back. So it's like project based and peer learning.
Got it. And so I assume that this is the learning mode that that you took place in as well, correct?
So my school is, partially using this. It's not fully using this methodology. But my co-founder, Julien Barbier, went through, this methodology and actually the first school in France that started that.
Got it. And so are you kind of surprised at the lack of that, you know, project-based education in the States?
I think that there is kind of a brainwashing around the, you know, like kind of like classic university college education, that if you don't fit this type of education, then you are a failure. You know, if you are not good at sitting in a class for 8 hours listening to someone telling you how to do something, then you are worth nothing and you won't get a career. And, you know, it does work for a lot of us, but it also does not work for a lot of us as well, right?
Sure.
And, for some reason, you know, like decades ago, we kind of classified learning by doing is only for blue collars type of job. And the society, you know, whether it's like parents, teacher, you know, government, companies, banks, as you know, being leaning towards right this type of passive education is you know what will train the next generation of white collar, and you know more active learning project based you know is only for blue collar. I'm not surprised you know that there is a lack in the US. That's actually the case for most countries in the world. But I think that today there is kind of misalignment between this type of education and what companies are looking for in terms of professionals. And so I believe that within the next decade, is going to shift.
Yeah, could not agree more. Employees or employers are looking for employees with experience, right? And the only way to gain that experience certainly isn't, or traditionally isn't, in the classroom. So that is something that we run into and in fact are trying to solve for on the marketing side of the house as well. So very, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, very close to my heart. In fact, I would say development, when you look at, there's a great analogy that I always use, and I think I should find this image, which I saw, I forget, it's been around the web many times, but essentially it's like, you know, you tell a developer to build, you know, this four-sided item and you know, what they come back with, you know, you're expecting a square and they come back with something that's completely different, right? And to me, that's the metaphor for why experience and on the job, you know, experience-based education is so critical. So
it is, yeah. And I would add, Justin, another thing that's great about, you know, this methodology is that by doing so, you also learn how to learn, because you know you are not right. brought the knowledge on a silver platter. It's up to you to go, like, learn it. You know, whether it's by watching YouTube video, by reading a book, or accessing the largest, you know, library that exists, which is the internet, or talking to your peers. And so, basically, by doing so, you learn how to learn. You become a self learner. And so, one thing, like, you know, while we have on analogy, you know, we say if you teach someone how to fish, you know, it's better than giving a fish to someone, right?
Sure.
So it's the same idea with education. If you teach skills to someone, you get them a job. But if you teach them how to learn, then you give them a career. And you know, in our world that's changing faster and faster, the need to retrain and retool and become a better professional is more and more here, right? And so I think education should focus on developing, you know, like, students and professional growth, rather than just, you know, teaching them one tool or one skill that will most likely disappear in like half decade or a decade.
Right. So obviously you had a great visibility into this from within SlideShare and then LinkedIn. What, tell me a little bit about that your own experiences that made you see this problem firsthand and want to go out and solve it.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I was interviewing a lot of software engineers as we were recruiting like crazy. And among them were a lot of, junior profile that were, you know, just out of college or university or, you know, is like not a lot of experience. And for a lot of them, they spend like nearly half a decade studying, and some of them has huge debt. And, we could see that the new stuff, right? They were far from being ready to take on a job. And, you know, it would take us anywhere from 6 months to a year to get them up to speed. And, you know, while I think that company needs to be part, of this coaching and training, sometimes it's just not possible because you need the right balance of senior people and productivity, and like onboarding junior and like, you know, spend, you know, your time training. And sometimes, you know, we didn't have that balance, and we needed like professionals who could, work like quite quickly and produce value quite quickly. And so, you know, like maybe that's part of the fact that, you know, I've been educated in France and that education is like, free or very cheap, but we wanted to provide this high quality education, to the most. And we want to make sure that you don't have artificial barrier to high quality education. And we think that, your financial situation is one of them. And so by, you know, removing the tuition and by removing bias in selection, we could access the best talents and eventually the best software engineer. We've seen this from like a Silicon Valley point of view, right? But if we look at the US, the US job market, only 10% of, open position for software engineering job are in Silicon Valley, like 90% are elsewhere in the US. And so,
and that's a huge amount of jobs, right? Like I was looking back in the notes for the show, and I had no idea there were over 50,000 job openings in the Bay Area alone.
Exactly. So it's, I think now we are more than 500,000 in the US.
Wow.
Which is massive. And that's only for the US, right? Like, I think Europe within the next decade, it's going to be close to 1 million. And in the US, it's going to be more than 1 million needed. So we definitely need to scale up high quality education.
So I'm curious, so you mentioned, you know, the economic barrier, which tends to be, you know, again, a large one for most students as they're considering how they're going to actually go out and enter the workforce, hopefully in one of those white collar jobs. So just tell me a little bit about how you guys remove that barrier.
Yeah, so, you know, if we take a step back and we look at today's model, the way it works is that, you know, you you pay for an education upfront, right? So you give your money to, you know, the institution that's supposed to teach you, and then like whether you find a job or not is not their problem. And actually, some institutions are saying that they are not training you, you know, to get a job, or they are not training you to get the first job but the fifth jobs. Or they are not training you to find a job, but to be a good citizen.
Right.
And, you know, I think there is some good in that, but also some bad points. I agree that, like, education is not only about skills, right? And I agree that, you know, you need to have kind of like a long-term vision education. You don't want to teach someone like skills that are going to become obsolete within, you know, months or a year. But I do think that post-secondary education should train you to be employed, right? Like, I don't think that, you know, any of us can thrive in our society if we are not contributing to it. First, because I think like work gives a meaning to our life, and second, because if you want to put bread on the table, you need to make like have a wage, and it's basically meaning having a job. So we are very much into getting students this growth potential to have a career, but also be able to find a job. Actually before graduation is what we are achieving. But the way we remove this financial barrier is by using ISA, which is the acronym for Income Share Agreement, where the deal is that like the school is free, completely free for students until they find a job, if they find a job. Meaning that the success of the school is proportional to the success of our students. We share their success, and if they don't find a job, then, you know, they don't pay us anything, and ultimately we close.
And so that model is definitely being employed by a lot of, I've seen it in software development, I've seen it in some other disciplines as well. Do you feel that's the long-term model that traditional universities are going to have to fall in line with as well?
I believe that that's going to be a norm within the, you know, next like half a decade / decade. We were actually honored to be invited to Washington last week to speak with the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, on how, you know, like the future of US education might look like. And I think today there is a clear issue that, you know, like the US citizens are not getting the type of education they deserve. And you know, like that has a huge impact on the society. And today, like 90%, according to Indeed, 90% of people who get into post-secondary education do it to find a job, right? Mm. But the issue is that they don't, and or they cannot access, you know, this type of education because it's way too expensive. So, you know, like I think in the US there is a great thing, like if you are like customer is always right, and if the customer is not happy about a service or a product, you can ask a refund. For some reason, that doesn't work for education, and the debt for education like is like growing like crazy. It's like higher than the credit card debt. So at some point it's going to, you know, explode, right? So my feeling is that students will want to see results before that. And basically if ISA, Income Share Agreement, is used by university or colleges or any other institution, they have skin in the game, right? Like they cannot fail in their mission to educate you. So I think the consumer will like just go with the institution who are using ISAs.
Yeah, it really aligns both interests around success, right?
Exactly. Like there is no way for, at Holberton, we do like 100% ISA. So meaning that we have no, you know, we don't have like any grants from the government, or we don't ask for any upfront money. So, you know, perhaps like, you know, college and university, you know, we are talking about a 90-10% ratio where it could be 90% upfront and 10%, you know, ISA. We'll see what, you know, if the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, wants to move on this, but my intuition is that they will.
So obviously you've got a great insight into the problem and also some good relationship to the potential fix for it. Tell me a little bit about the point in which you decided, hey, I'm actually going to take an active role in this and start a school.
I'm a software engineer, but with my co-founder Julien Barbier, we did a bunch of community building activities. He was head of marketing and community at Docker, which is, you know, one of the most successful open source projects that's right there. And he built this community that's in, 400 meetups worldwide. And we built together this Well4EDU community, which is in 40 cities in the world. And so we were really well connected to the developer community worldwide, right? And when we were chatting with the head of all these communities, meetups and groups, we heard the same thing over and over. It's hard to find highly qualified software engineer, whether it's in Japan, in Vietnam, in Russia, or in Europe, or in the US. That was the same thing. And we knew about this alternative education methodology. That's training at scale high quality software engineer. And the at scale is very important. If obviously there is high quality education out there, speak about MIT and Stanford and Harvard, but those don't scale, right? They are in the business of scarcity, right? And actually one of their stats is how many people we accept or deny, right? And the lower the admission rate, the better it is. Which might or might not be good. I let you judge on that. But the issue is that we don't train enough high qualified people, right? I think it's Elon Musk who was saying, I have great plan, but I need the educated workforce, right? And if you look at Amazon, who is hunting for a city for their HQ, HQ2,
right.
In the problem is, we need a very well established and working education system. I think that we speak about automation and AI. I actually love it because what robots do is most of the time boring. It's like repetitive tasks that we should not be giving to human, right? We want a job that's stimulating and interesting and creative. And creativity is something that robot and AI cannot do, and at least for a while, right? But if you cannot educate human on being creative and on having the tools to do the interesting jobs, then there is an issue. I think the problem is huge, the opportunity is huge, and we didn't see there is a lot of things that are being tried in education, but we think it still needs to be broken, disrupted, and mm-hmm. so we wanted to take a shot at it.
And so what has been the reception of this model, I think both from the educational community and from the tech community?
Great. Honestly, we have a very good positive feedback. Lately, we had the CEO of LinkedIn, Jeff Wiener, who joined as an investor and advisor. We had Vint Cerf, co-founder of the internet, who also said a lot of great things about Holberton. And we are supported by a community of more than 120 mentors who are professional working in the tech industry, who are volunteering for the school to make sure that students are getting a first good fit in the tech industry. So the program is 2 years. For 90% of our students, after 9 months, they find a job or an internship. We have approximately 75% of company who take our students want more, and it's company Tesla, Apple, NASA, LinkedIn, Nvidia, Dropbox, and so on. Students love it. We have an NPS of 64. And we have satisfaction rate of student manager, which is at 90%. The two metrics I look at is hey, are my students happy? Yes. Are the, you know, company hiring, are students happy? Yes. And then like kind of like the two metrics that you know are very important to us. So far it's been overwhelming. Yeah.
That's awesome. Have you guys been able to overlay any of those stats with traditional university? I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, like we did. The thing with universities, I think they are great in some ways, and I think they just serve different purposes.
Right.
I think that universities are great training people who want to be in the academic world or who want to become researcher. You know, that's something that they are doing amazingly, and that, you know, we probably won't be doing at Holberton for a while. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think like a lot of universities are doing great in this way, but simply, I don't think they are like training the type of worker that most company wants.
Right.
So it's like, obviously the number are really different, but maybe it would be a kind of a mistake to compare them because the goal are not the same. But I think this is not clear for a lot of us in the society.
Right, right. Yeah, essentially you're providing a different path for folks that that don't want to go down some of those more traditional channels. So that's awesome. So we've talked a lot about the market need, which is obviously the big, you know, paramount item here. But I'm also curious, you know, about the business day to day. I would say that being that you didn't set out to be an entrepreneur, but ended up there as most of us do. I'm curious as to what your day-to-day looks like and you know, what you enjoy about that day.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like we create the company around community. Like we think about it as a family. Family, you know, being staff, being students, being alumni, being mentor, being contractor, being investor. And so kind of my work is like to kind of orchestrate, you know, this community building. I focus, you know, as a co-founder, obviously I focus on things like, you know, strategy of the company and fundraising. But kind of the two things that, you know, I'm kind of the key holder for is, our, you know, press relation and community building. So, you know, recruiting mentors, and connecting them with students. So it's like Holberton is an interesting company because it's not really a school, right? We have no formal teacher, no lecture. It's not a tech company, right? It's not like all about software, right? We have a physical location. We are training, you know, humans. So it's an interesting mix between building software that can scale and building a community that can scale, which is, you know, what in some way I was building software at scale at LinkedIn and at SlideShare, and I was building community on you know, as a hobby. And now it kind of became my work, you know, as a co-founder of the school.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was looking through the list of advisors and teachers or, you know, contributors to the community. And I was surprised to find so many with a business background, you know, CEOs, founders, and so on. So how much of the business side actually creeps into, you know, the education process as well?
So what do you mean by, you know, business, like,
So in terms of just, you know, building something for, you know, taking an MVP to market, getting user feedback, the more, I guess, the economic side of building a piece of software, which is more of that business end.
Yeah, so we chat a lot with mentors to make sure that the product, which is, you know, the curriculum and the type of education, is training the type of professional they'd like to hire. Mm-hmm. Both because, you know, it trains, you know, students on the soft skills that will make them more than just software engineer, but actually leaders and, you know, coworkers and people with the growth potential you want to work with, but also obviously hard skills, you know, like, do you know the tools that are currently in use? So we are constantly speaking with mentors who are professional working in the tech industry, and we have all sorts of professional, you know, we have, as you said, executive, CEO, CTOs, founders. We also have, you know, VP engineering, we have designer, recruiter, journalist, investor, you name it. We also want to make sure that one of the mission, which is to provide you know, this high quality education to the most. And to the most, you know, might sometimes mean that is not perhaps the best business decision. And so we have the board of trustees, which is composed of a variety of, you know, professional and leader who are making sure that, you know, this vision is respected. So on the kind of like to the most, you know, part of the mission, we have Jocelyn Graham, with the CEO and co-founder of Klarna, which is an organization that advocating to get more women in tech. And we have also Neo, with, you know, like a songwriter and singer, with Black African American, and is helping us to make sure that we are communicating to this underrepresented, you know, demographic, in the tech industry.
Right.
And so, and actually, you know, while you might think that, business wise, you know, like kind of short term is not the best option, actually on the long term, being a school that's about providing opportunity to those who otherwise could not have it actually has a lot of sense, because today in the US, the great university has only access to a very small amount of talent, because you need talent that have been through this perfect education and also financial situation. But statistically, there is like, you know, if you have access to a greater pool of talent, you have higher chance to have, you know, better students, right?
Yeah, and absolutely.
Exactly. And so better students mean at the end, better professional. So I think what's great about Holberton is that, you know, the business is also ethical and will also serve the tech industry.
Yeah. I mean, something needs to cross that huge chasm. You know, we can't train all of our development talent in San Francisco or Austin or Seattle. Like, you know, so, something has to bring software development to mid-America. So it sounds like that is, that's one of the core missions that you guys are fulfilling on as well.
It is indeed. Like, we, you know, we started out of Silicon Valley because that's the toughest place to operate, in the sense that the bar to entry in the best, like, you know, we could assume that the best software company are in Silicon Valley, and the bar to entry is the highest perhaps in the world. So it was kind of a challenge to say, hey, if we can train software engineers that get into these companies, then we have chances that, you know, where we'll go elsewhere in the US, they will have, you know, they will be able to find job as well. And the fact to be in the Silicon Valley also allow us to have access to this community of mentors who help us to shape the curriculum. And we have, you know, always like bleeding edge, you know, project and content. But obviously we want to be bringing this high quality education elsewhere in the US. You know, like, you have a lot of growing economy cities where people need to be trained. And that's like kind of the next chapter in the story of Holberton.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned mentors. I'm curious who have been your mentors along the way? And I guess what I'm really looking to get after is, what do you think enabled you to say, hey, here's a problem, I think I can go solve it, and I can start a business to do that?
Yeah, so, you know, the school is, you know, as I mentioned previously, like, is built as a community. And we started with the school with 50 mentors who, we are mostly, you know, from our network, people we helped with Julian, and who basically wanted to give back. And as we grew, you know, this, like, and the press and the students and, you know, a company hiring our students, and then a coworker of the student wanted to give back. And basically when we pitch, you know, the school to people in the tech industry, they are like, oh, wow, that sounds amazing. That's exactly the type of school I would have liked to attend, right? And then they want to be part of it. So all these mentors, you know, you can go on holbertonschool.com and you go in the team section, are, you know, in some ways, they are mentoring the students, but also school and ultimately me and, you know, the team on how shall we build the school and the curriculum, right? So, you know, if we would be the only one, you know, we are 9 employees building, you know, this school, we might be wrong, right? But when you have 100 people who are in the tech industry who are here to advise you, then chances that you are wrong are, you know, like, way less, right? So all the mentors are also mentoring us in some capacity. Obviously, we have, like, investors like few investors that, you know, really believe in the vision and you know, gave us the opportunity to start this school. Without them, there would be no Holberton, because obviously, you know, because students don't pay anything up front, we needed capital to start this. We have Dan Skolnick from Trinity Venture, along with Anjula Acharya. We have Marie Eklund, which is a fund from Europe, and Chantal Poulsen. And I think, you know, one advice to people who are thinking about to start their company is really, you know, your investor is like your family. Like, you know, like you can't really get rid of them, right? Like your friend, you can, but family, you can't. And it's really important to work with, you know, investors that have the same vision. Like, this is like, it's not just about money. It's like about vision. You know, a startup is like a roller coaster of emotion. You have a constant flow of problem, and in tough time, it's very important to have you know, like financial partner that, you know, will either trust in the, like, help you you know, figure things out, or like are like firm believer. And yeah, so I think this is really key.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up here, I'm curious, maybe you have several, but is there a piece of advice that has stuck with you from, you know, this entire journey, maybe something someone said to you, or, you know, something a mentor passed on?
Yeah. In terms of, you know, if you are an entrepreneur or thinking to be an entrepreneur, I would advise to work on something that you are really passionate about, because being an entrepreneur and the company you are building or you will build will become your entire life, right? And more than your life, you know, like, obviously you will work your, you know, your ass off, and like, you know, everything becomes it, like, you know, like discussion with your family, with your friend, everybody asks you about it. And so I think choosing something that you truly, truly care about is like really important. Second thing is, I would say you need to have at least one co-founder, because it's tough. It's quite tough, and you need someone to be able to support you. And, you know, I would not have been able to do this without my co-founder, Julien. So I think having at least one co-founder is quite important. And one thing also I've learned, which, you know, might not apply to all of us, but when you have like a huge problem, you know, that is coming up, something stressful that you have to face, and you might want to react right away or answer, you know, right away. One thing I've learned over the past 2 years, you know, I've started this venture, is that you should give it a little time, right? Kind of like take a step back, think about it, you know, go outside of a walk and chat about it with your coworkers, because, like a lot of time when I, you know, reacted right away on the problem, I took the wrong decision, and taking a step back has always so far been a positive thing.
Great advice. So as we wrap up here, again, Sylvan Kalash with Halberton School, a huge, you know, fulfilling a huge need out there, and also doing it in a really innovative new way with these implied social contracts and so on. Sylvan, if people want to learn more about Halberton, where can they go? And you know, I guess also, where are the campuses located?
Yeah, so, you know, you can, you know, like Google us, Halberton School. We've had like, you know, more than 200 press articles, you know, over the past 2 years. And you can also read, you know, a lot of write-up and videos from our students. So, you know, there is a lot of content out there. In terms of campus, for now we are, you know, located only in San Francisco, but we are, unfortunately, I can't give location because it's not public, but we are thinking about expanding nationally and even internationally. We have been reached out by a lot of cities, companies, individuals, and countries who are seeing, you know, this kind of education mismatch and want to you know, to solve this. So even if one of, you know, your audience, you know, is interesting to work with us on that, we are you know, we are starting to accept this type of request and really looking forward expanding.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, I appreciate you sharing your story with us today. We mentioned, you know, the Amazon hunt for a new campus, and I think as you look at the cities that actually meet the criteria that you've outlined there, is certainly around education, it just highlights the need for what you guys are doing in a big way. So I appreciate you sharing the story with us here today.
Thank you, Justin.
Absolutely. And again, if you are listening and you want to check out this episode or past episodes, please feel free to join us over at leadmd.com/marketplace. And remember to trust in the unconventional.
Thanks for listening to the Driven & Co. podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. To hear more, visit leadmd.com/marketplace.